Welcome to TFP, the Theater Folk Podcast, the place to be for drama teachers, drama students, and theater educators everywhere. I'm Lindsay Price, resident playwright for Theater Folk. Hello, I hope you're well. Thanks for listening. This is episode 144, and you can find any links for this episode in the show notes. Where are they? Theaterfolk.com/episode144. All right, today, in this episode, which would be 144, we're going to look at theater in a new light. And I think that's the amazing, awesome, wonderful, spectacular thing about theater. It's not static. It doesn't have to be. It's malleable. It's changeable. You can approach the act of theater in so many different ways. It can happen in a theater. It can happen in a parking lot. It can be realistic, absurd, intimate, epic. You know, people can break into song at any moment and people will go, yeah, that's theater. You can take a piece of theater and put it in a different style. You can take something from another genre and adapt it to a theatrical form. All this different explorations and approaches, those are the reasons that I love theater and why I like writing and being in this form. So that's what we're going to do today. Look at theater in a new light. So first we're going to talk to Clark Taylor. Clark is a drama teacher in Georgia, and he took a podcast and adapted it to the stage using shadow puppetry, live actors, and live music. And when I got that email from Clark, I knew I wanted to talk to him about this. So, and after I talked to Clark, I'm going to talk to a group of students who took one of my plays and adapted it into a film, used their school as the location, as the landscape. But first, we talked to Clark. Let's get to it. All right, I am here today with Clark Taylor. Hello, Clark.
Hey, how's it going?
Awesome. How are you?
Just fantastic.
I like to hear that. All right. So so first off, tell everyone in the world where you are situated.
Well, right now I'm direct from my living room in Atlanta, Georgia.
Awesome. And how long have you been a drama teacher?
I've been a drama teacher a long time.
Is it too long? Too long to put numbers?
I mean, you may as well cut my leg off and count.
Okay. All right.
Let's just say that. I didn't get started though. I was out of college and I was pursuing my career here in Atlanta. And I don't know. I've gone through all these other artistic bugs of my life, starting as a visual artist and then as a musician, composer, actor. I did lots of designing here in Atlanta, and teaching just called to me. I just really found niche there and able to use the gifts I had artistically to kind of combine that. So there's a reason of finishing my master's up at the Ashland Center for Theater Studies in Southern Oregon there. And it's just been wonderful.
Well, that's awesome.
To be able to share that, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's pretty wonderful to say you've been teaching since the dawn of time. And and yet that your last thought about it is that it's still wonderful.
Yeah, it is. It's really completes the teaching artist in me, I think, very, very much. I love that I get to go in and as a teacher and as a director to use visual and aural elements to share the storytelling that I think is so unique and so important to what we get to do
in
the theater.
Yeah, and I think at its heart, I mean, theater is a visual medium. We sometimes forget that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's interesting, you know, how we're going to come more to talking about this, how the show we did came around from a aural medium, a podcast, and makes its way on stage as a visual driven piece.
Well, that gets us right into the heart of what we're talking about today. So Clark sent me an email and told me about his production that highlighted shadow puppetry and also a awesome use of, you had five overhead projectors that
right.
you used. And I just think that that is a, what a great, a different aspect of theater. And it makes it completely visual in terms of, because yeah. it's, we need to see, when we're looking at the shadow puppetry, we need to, that's what we've got in terms of, we've got shadows in terms of making that happen. So let's get into, why did you go from an oral, from the, or from an oral podcast medium and choose, partly shadow puppetry to illuminate it?
Yeah, great story. Our creative director at school, Trey Bowden, he and I did a production together of a verbatim drama by Annabelle Sotar based on the GMO battle over a canola farmer. And it was a really cool experience. We got to implement a lot of visual elements of a little shadow puppetry and overhead projectory, and we had like a video monitor wall, and it was fantastic. And so he approached me last school season, said that he was able to secure this cult following podcast called Welcome to Night Vale, and he had gotten permission to let us stage it. And so I said, wow, fantastic and great. And then the more I started listening to the podcast, I mean, it's one, I don't know if you're familiar with it. It's kind of like.
I am familiar with it. And it's.
It's the Twilight Zone.
Yes, yes, yes. And it's a, you know, to call it a, it is a podcast, but it's not like this podcast where we're talking interviews and stuff. It's much more out there.
Yeah, a really wonderful avant-garde experimental piece. And so we went around with, well, how, you know, we wanted to stage this and still keep the elements of what made that such a cool, unique podcast in place. And so where our black box theater is really presented a wonderful opportunity for us. Before it was a black box, it was a weight conditioning room.
Oh, okay. Let's pause and let that sink in for everybody.
Yes. Yes.
And let me say it. Let me verbalize it for everybody.
Okay.
Oh my God. Yes. So just a sweaty box,
yeah.
basically.
Yeah. It smells like sweaty actors now.
So. Well, okay.
But it's, you know, it's a small space and it is divides between it, the school cafeteria, by a wall with four big panels of glass. And their eventual purpose is that they were going to just remove that wall and make it one big old giant cafeteria, until I said, wow, this would just make a fantastic black box for us and give us a place to do more intimate theater and really experiment. And the school has always been wonderful in letting us explore and innovate and collaborate artistically. So fast forward, a dear friend of mine and an amazing puppeteer, Lee Bryan. In fact, it's known as Lee Bryan, that puppet guy. we've done a lot of shows together and implementing puppetry, but I never had a chance to do a lot of big shadow puppetry with him. And so he came in and looked at those glass panels and said, whoa, like this would just make an incredible shadow puppetry opportunity for you. So I said, what? We're going to have the audience sit out in the cafeteria and watch the show on these glass panels. And he said, yeah. And so that's where I started discovering the wonders of low-tech overhead projectors.
I have myself done I did a tour with I did a shadow puppetry version of Romeo and Juliet, in which we used low-tech, we only had one, low-tech projectors. I think they're, yeah. I mean.
It's amazing. It's just yeah. wonderful, rough magic that happens when you start, you know, pushing that medium around and seeing all the just incredible opportunities you have to do things. I'll do another shout-out. Lee said, you got to watch this group out of Canada called, and I love the name, Manual Cinema.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all they do. It's just overhead, shadow, puppetry, and live action in front of, you know, various light elements and that. So that's what we went for. We had live actors who were acting and interacting with what we were doing on the overhead projectors. Just took bed sheets and made some roll-up blinds for the glass panels. We incorporated a live band because the podcast itself, for their sections at the Say and Now the Weather, they have music. And so we had live band playing outside, and actors sometimes that would go in front of the panels as the story was unfolding. So it was a theatrical experience that none of us had trucked with before. And for the students, it was just fantastic because they had the opportunity to experiment as technicians and as artists and actors. So if they weren't, you know, behind a projector and manipulating cardboard and, you know, light gel and whatever, they were on stage in all kinds of apparatus and costumes performing. So it was really wonderful.
So, okay, so there's two things that I want to. One, I want to, like, get into that whole, the student response side. But can you just break down a little bit about what exactly you, how you use the projectors? Can you visually sort of just talk about for anybody listening, like, what do you, you know, how, what do you mean? How do you use an overhead projector?
Sure.
And what is the final effect?
Yeah. So we had 4 to 5 of these. A couple of them were at school and the rest I just got really cheap off of eBay. And they're just the old, you know, transparency projector. We measured them out and had them all set and sort of, you know, rough calibrated that we could show single images off of each panel of glass. You know, we had a projector for every panel, but we could also configure it to show one big continuous image using 4. But that took a lot of rehearsal. Off of the puppeteers to pull that off. We mounted them just on some tables that we had for height and experimented with material. The bed sheet was incredibly great. Payoff, we didn't have to spend a lot of money to get any twin screens or that for it. And then we had a 5th overhead projector that was our sort of moving camera. We had it on a little track that we could move back and forth in front of the other projectors. So we had some animation with it for scenes that we wanted to do. We had like a moon going across. So everything that was done was manually operated. We had no computerized technology happening. We wanted it to be authentic, and you know, some of the kids said, "Well, it's like acoustic projection." and I said, "Yeah, it is."
And well, in this world, you know, that we live in right now, where everything is CGI and everything is that I'm sure your students are of that age where they expect spectacle that is computer driven.
Yeah,
and to be able to provide them with an opportunity where the spectacle is of their own creation, both artistically and actually physically, I think that's very cool. All right.
Yeah. And I think because a lot of the imagery we used was silhouetted, I think a lot of that imagination buy-in from the audience and from the performers as well just really paid off. That, as you're saying with CGI, that we're having so much of our imagination filled in for us by the crazy special effects that we're given a steady diet of. And so this, I keep going back, it's just a wonderful rough magic that came out of this experience. And for the audience, they were blown away. They'd never seen anything like it. Our headmaster was very impressed. We had a show and share afterwards that everyone can come backstage, which was in the black box, and see, you know, all the mirrors and smoke that we'd been doing. And when they see how simple it was, that was just, you know, my overhead projectors and a whole lot of transparency sheets and some cardboard for cutouts and, you know, my costumes, they were really saying, wow, that's really incredibly impressive.
Did you play with color at all, or was it everything? Yeah.
Yeah, we did. And as I said, you know, we just got, you know, a couple of light gel sample packs and we made mosaics with them. We used translucent markers and paint to do a lot of color on it. We had a couple of LED lights that we hung in some places to give us a big broad wash of color. And also it colored shadows nicely. So we kind of incorporated that, but the majority of it was coming off of the overheads. And the nice thing about our printing world now is that you could grab images. You didn't have to be a great artist. There's just tons of clip art that we could manipulate a little and then throw it on these transparency sheets and just print them out.
Mm-hmm. I find that amazing now, because I think you can just throw them into a printer, can't you?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and you can do black and white or color.
Wow. Isn't that, I think that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. And some of the more animated things, you know, we just built. We learned to experiment with scale a lot in the process, and also because the projectors themselves mounted were about, 3-4 feet apart from each other. So doing a scene, we had one scene where there was this rolling man, just rolling left to right. But we had to have 4 images of him, and we had to rehearse the. So when he went off of, you know, the first screen, our second puppeteer is moving their rolling guy. So to make it look consistent and continuous, that took a lot of rehearsal time. And it was just fun. It was the most fun exploration we had. It was incredibly hard work, granted, to be sure, but we all kind of felt like pioneers.
Sure.
About this, you know, playing with this new medium.
Okay, so then let's talk about your students. What was their initial response when you said, "Okay, this is what we're doing"?
Yeah, there's a long pause for the buy-in. I think it is going back to what you're saying about this generation has grown up in a technological digital world that they've seen, you know, all this amazing contrived digital stuff in film and on TV. And so when I was pitching this to them, it was hard for them to wrap their heads around it, but they, you know, trusted me. They know I'm pretty crazy anyway, but accomplished a lot of wonderful things. So they bought in, and as we started moving and manipulating and creating the stuff, they really got into it and were, from that point, being inspired and innovative to come back and say, look, what happens when I do this with this gel and this, you know, piece of fabric?
Yeah.
And so it was a wonderful discovery process, and they ended up just owning it themselves. And I was able to move back more and more and let them go. And that was just the most satisfying for me.
Oh, yeah. Because what a wonderful thing that something that is sort of met with resistance ends up becoming their own creation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And yeah, they're so proud of it. And so we're to show folks when we went backstage to see the things, you could just see it in their faces and so proud, and just watching folks' face when they saw, you know, what it really was, making all the fantastic, phantasmagorical show happen.
And I just so where do you think that having this experience for them, what was their takeaway, and that what would they,
well,
how are they going to, how could they apply it?
Went off and did an internship at the Center for Puppeteer Arts. It's our big organization, major puppeteer organization here in Atlanta, And she went off and did an internship with him because she was so inspired.
Oh my God, that's really cool. Like unexpected.
Yeah. Yeah. And they, I think they've become more interested in the visual aspects of, I don't know, maybe the simplicity effect with theater, that a small thing can just get so much creating empathy and excitement. That was a big discovery for a lot of them.
You know what, too? Because there is so much emphasis in their daily lives on spectacle, and we say, you know, theater can be intimate, theater can be small. Mm-hmm. And what sometimes ends up happening is it's like it's bare stages and acting, which is fine. I'm very happy with that. But mm-hmm. what a great way to introduce to students, this is how we can be simple and this is how we can be theatrical and yet spectacle.
Yeah. Yeah. The other interesting thing that came out of was the aural aspect that we had gone with deciding on, you know, there are so many episodes. We decided we were going to do the pilot episode of Welcome to Night Vale. And then another piece was called Story About You. And rehearsal, we had made a lot of recorded voiceover work with our main actor. But at the end, we made a big decision to go back with him live. And that made a really big difference in our first act. Our second act was so loaded with audio things that were happening live and on recorded medium that it was another wonderful experience for the students to, you know, to see in just those two acts the variety and that they could do with it.
That's awesome. So if you are speaking to a teacher who is listening and about implementing a shadow puppetry, what advice would you give them?
I would give them some advice. There's a lot of great books out there and a lot of them dedicated to overhead projectionary. Can I say that? Projectionary?
I say you can.
Okay, good. one of the things called, I think it's called World of Shadow. That's a great book, and it kind of gives you a wonderful scale that, you know, here's what you can do if, you know, with just a sheet and a flashlight, and showing you the small scales of working with overhead with just one overhead projector. Build a screen that's got some great schematics in there, and that was really helpful to us that Lee recommended. And just, you know, go out there, use the internet, get on Google, check out Manual Cinema. It will blow you away. The unique thing about them is that you get to see all the manipulation happening right in front of you, the way they situate themselves. That you can see the puppeteers doing their thing, but right above them is the screen that it's all happening. And
oh, I like that, because then it's a learning thing too.
Yeah, yeah, and you know they use live music; all their stuff's original, but it's just mind blowing what they can do, and it's just all manipulated; it's all hand manipulated. It's like watching a magic show, you know. But you're getting to see how they do the trick, but it's still awesome.
Well, isn't that's the best kind of magic, when the mechanics of the trick don't actually matter. It's a trick and it's still awesome.
Yeah, and isn't it with theater that, you know, we come in and, you know, we want to escape and buy into. You know, we're looking at Elsinore Castle and we know it's made out of foam block and 2x4s. I think with the puppetry, there's I don't know, there's this old magic about it, that it seemed like our audience was willing to just totally go with it. and be caught up in the story.
Do you think it mattered that you weren't telling a children's story, but using, you know, something like puppetry, you know, quote unquote, as a children's technique? Do you think that mattered, or that not mattered, that made a difference?
I don't think so. All the parents, adults that came to it, they were just amazed that, you know, they could enjoy something like that. I think there was a lot of the curious that came in to experience it, and a lot of them just walked out just saying, I've never seen anything like that. It was amazing. And so, you know, I think, and granted, there's lots of adult puppetry out there that's happening, shadow and otherwise. I just think we're seeing more of that here, you know, with things like Avenue Q and all the great stuff that Julie Taymor did to bring big puppetry into the theater. With Lion King, she just used so many different varieties of it in that. And plays with like Manuel Cinnamon and another great Canadian troupe called the Old Trout Puppet Company. And they use a lot of that technique as well as other manipulative art. So, yeah, I think it's there for everyone.
Well, it's pretty much the definition of a theatrical experience.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Yeah, I think you get it all.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Oh, Clark, thank you so much for sharing this. I think that these are the kinds of things that we want to sort of get out there, that it's possible. We don't need big budgets, and we don't need fancy sets, lights, and costumes. We can do it all with an overhead projector.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Clark. Ah, so awesome. Okay, so Shelby County High School in Kentucky, they worked on a production of one of my plays, Agatha Rex, and they approached the play differently. They wanted to approach it as a film project rather than a theater piece. So let's talk to them, see how it worked, see what they did. Okay, I am talking to some folks at Shelby County High School in Kentucky, and these guys have been working on a production of Agatha Rex, and they've approached the show differently. They've been filming it, using it as a film project rather than a theater piece. And I've got a couple of guys here. I have Trent Moody. He played Dr. Creon in Agatha Rex. I have the director, Harrison Baldwin. Josh Berry, co-director. Trey Stahlnaker. And Gabe Lehman, you're a tech guy. Okay, so Harrison, let's start with you. Why did you decide to do this as a film project instead of directing it as a theater piece?
A couple of reasons, really. Kind of the initial one was like, yeah, let's try to take a different take on this, do something different. But also it worked out even better with us having only 1 hour intervals to work on it, to practice it, and there's really no time to perform it or have extended rehearsals with people, with it just being kind of a class and not being able to come after school and work on it for longer periods of time. So it worked out even better that we could film it and adapt it. And also it's a cool challenge that we wanted to take on, try to do it a little differently.
And so that was the thought behind it. Okay, we're just going to take this and then we're going to put it on film. And then how was the reality of filming this? What was your biggest challenge?
The biggest challenge was probably the takes and the cuts and like where to cut it and where to start filming again. Because I don't know, when you watch a movie or whatever, you're like, oh, this flows really nicely. And it's difficult when you're on the other side to think, how are we going to make this flow as nicely as we see on TV or in the movies?
Josh, you were working with Harrison on this, and so what was your job as co-director?
I was more of a stage manager.
Okay. So what was your job?
So like he would give me like the idea, he would cut the script and change it to where it would fit with the recording aspect instead of us on a stage. So I would just put people where he wanted them to go, tell them what they were gonna do, and kind of did the more on the personal level rather than like the small picture rather than the big picture was kind of my job.
Did you have to handle the actors?
I did.
Okay. Trent, what was it like being handled?
At times it was kind of frustrating, but it was fun.
Yeah, what was it like working on this as a film project?
It was a bit different than actually doing it on stage, because it gets more personal when it's like on camera.
How so?
Like, you see yourself doing it, whereas if you're on stage, you just perform it for people. So you get to have feedback on yourself.
Yeah, it's a much different experience, is it, when you you can hide a little bit on stage, can't you? Because you don't really know what you look like and what you sound like, but there's that you're right, it's a real intimacy in film. You can actually, you see all the flaws, everything very up close. Would you say?
Yeah.
Yeah? What would you, so how did you, because Dr. Creon, he's a big character. He's the principal. He's not really vicious, but he's very stern and he's very unchanging, unwavering. How did you play him?
I kind of, like, when I was doing his voice, like, I did him kind of angry with a little bit of sarcasm, because, like, he knew he was getting to the student as he was talking to them, and it was really fun.
Yeah? How so?
Because I got to mess with the students while on the serious note, I also got to mess with them, and it was kind of a fun experience.
All right, and tell me, Gabe, so you were, you did sound, is that right?
I did sound and lighting, all kinds of stuff, really.
And what were the challenges for you?
Well, actually, you know, honestly, I feel like shooting the play on camera made it a lot easier, you know. Problem shooting was a lot easier, you know, to speak up or get closer, or open up, and it's a lot easier to hear you and see you and all kinds of stuff, where if you're shooting on the stage, you know, you're going to take 10 to 20 minutes at a time trying to figure out what you can do to fix what you're doing. But on camera, it was a lot easier.
Did you have to, what's your experience working with sound?
Actually, this is the first time I've ever done it, and I really enjoyed it.
Awesome. How about you, Harrison and Josh, was this your first time working with film?
It was. Actually, we've done, working with film, yes, we've done various other projects in the class that where we've kind of taken the director role, I guess you could say, but this was our first time actually filming it and using the cameras and the more technological stuff.
And why do you think that Agatha Rex worked well as a film project?
Well, first off, we had a great setting to do it in, because, you know, we're
in a school.
In a school, yeah. So that made it easy to find areas to film and get offices and things like that. It was good because, sorry, what was your question again? Sorry, if you could repeat that. I apologize.
That's okay. So I just want to know why it worked well. This particular play worked well as a film project. So we know that your location worked well. What about the content of the story?
It worked well. I guess the location, you could say that even the people in it worked well, because they understand, they go through the stuff that Agatha, well, not as drastic, but they go through the stuff every single day, like the egotistical teacher trying to be over-controlling and doing whatever they want, so they understand that, and they can sympathize and really understand and get into character, because it's close to the persona that they take on every single day.
And, so, do you have a finished product of your film yet?
We're working on it. We're working on finally piecing it together, but it's taken so long because we had to take a break, because here at Chippewa County we did like a fine arts spectrum, so all the arts department put on a presentation, and so the drama department put on just a section of our of the Agatha Rex that actually was performed on stage, so we got a little bit of that too, and so we just had to take a certain parts and actually put them together to make a one coherent piece scene, and so we've been working on that for the past few weeks to get that ready to be presented.
Right, so now you've got back to, so what's your, what's going to be the final cut of this? How long is it going to be, do you think?
It's really hard to tell with all the, because it really hasn't been pieced together. We're working on piecing together Act 1, and I'm still kind of filming Act 2, and so it'll probably be, I don't know, an hour, close to an hour, probably 30, 45 minutes.
That's a pretty huge project, eh?
Yeah,
I think that's a really amazing undertaking that you guys have put on. Okay, so let's talk. Let's go through each one of you guys. I want you to tell me what's something that you learned on this project that you
you're going to apply to the next project that you work on. So let's go through. So Trent, what's one thing that you learned working on Agatha Rex this way?
If in the next production, if I do one, to be an authority figure, I know how it would feel to be that, so I could better depict it.
Yeah, you've got some muscle memory, right? You've got, by working on this type of character, you could play this type of character again. Is this kind of character in your natural personality, or is it completely different?
I'm not usually a mean person, so no.
Well, that's good. Well, it's good. It's good that you're not a mean person. We try to shy away from that, right? What about working on film itself? What's something that you learned working on film that you can apply next time?
About like just the aspects of it, like knowing where to stand, like in terms of where the camera is. Because if it's like real close, you don't want to be like all up on the camera.
It's a very specific medium, isn't it? Like you can't, like a lot of times on stage, there's a lot of, you can get away with wandering around and maybe like making some different choices with your blocking. In film, because everything is so tight, you really have to, you know what your mark is and really hit it, right? Harrison, did you have trouble with people not hitting their, getting their marks and they're hitting their place what they were supposed to?
Yeah, sometimes in the beginning, gradually got better as they got more comfortable with the filming and stuff. But that also was another way that filming worked out, because, you know, if that happened, someone missed a cue or missed a line or anything like that happened, just do another take.
Awesome. Harrison, what's one thing that you learned, have you learned in this process that you would apply?
You gotta be flexible. You can't have you can have a plan, but when we started, we tried to map out, like, this day we're filming this. Exactly this, and so that within 2 days that was just all over the place, and so you just gotta learn to adapt and learn to be flexible, and with the taking the break to do the fine art spectrum and having to kind of mend the script to make for what we were trying to accomplish with that, you just gotta be able to be flexible and take on whatever challenge and do the best you can and with a good attitude.
And Josh, how about you? What did you learn about in this project?
Oh, well, it would be kind of the same thing with flexibility, but in a different way. Because I had to deal with the actors, and some days I didn't want to do anything.
So what did you do?
Well, if that actor wasn't in a scene that was on later, we'd have to, like, shoot that one instead of the one we were previously going to take. I just had to figure out, you know, use what I had to make this scene, I guess.
Right. Okay, Trey, what did you learn in this process?
Mainly to adapt, that sometimes you're not always going to be the big dog, so you got to change your characters up.
Okay, and Gabe?
Well, I learned to take charge.
Nice. So,
you know, some of the people didn't want to work together, but, you know, you have to make sure that they're working together. You know, they're adapting to each other. And, you know, it played a really big role in that, just getting as far as we have right now, really.
Awesome. Okay. What do you think, guys? Is that basically, I think that's probably what we've got on this project, eh? I hope that it all comes together for you. And was it fun working on this project?
Definitely.
Awesome. Well, that's all we can ask for, right? That at least it was. I'm really impressed that it's going to be such a. I guess I know the play is that long, but to put together an hour long film project like that, that's a lot of that is a lot of work. Harrison, are you and Josh putting together the final edit?
Us and Gabe.
Are you and Gabe? Okay, cool. I think that's great. Okay, well, all the best with that.
Well, thank you very much.
Awesome. Thank you for talking to me.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Okay. Bye, Trent.
See ya.
Bye, Harrison.
Bye.
Thank you, Josh.
See ya.
Thank you, Trey.
See ya.
And thank you, Gabe.
Have a great day.
All right. You too. Thank you, guys.
All right. Thanks.
Bye.
Thank you, guys. So that was Trent Moody. He played Dr. Creon in the project. Harrison Baldwin was the director. Trey Stalnicker was another character, Elliot. And Gabe Lehman was the tech. So before we go, let's do some Theater Folk news. It's a play feature. It's a play feature. It's time to feature a play. So I wanted to direct you to one of our brand new plays that looks at theater in a new light, in a different light. And actually, it's not really a new light. It's a completely old light. It's a very, it is a theater as radio play. So we have Dead Men Don't Do Radio Plays by Allison William. This collection of two plays. So there's two one-act plays in here. We have Dead Men Don't Carry Handbags, Dead Men and Dead Men Don't Jaywalk. They both feature the same character, Steve Powell, who is radio star Frank Grayson, Private Eye. So on the radio show, he's your typical suave, you know, has a way with the ladies, Private Eye. Not so much in real life. Not suave. No ways with the ladies, and has this habit of narrating his life. But that doesn't stop crimes from falling into his lap and his life. So can this guy step into his character's shoes and get the dame? Well, you're going to have to read the play to find out. So this is such a great format for your students. And Allison has done an amazing job with being very specific with the sound effects that you can use. And just there's a nice essay at the end about putting on radio plays and how you can do it in the traditional style and still in front of an audience. So that's Dead Men Don't Do Radio Plays. I'm going to put the link in the show notes, which you can find at theaterfolk.com/episode144. Finally, where can you find this podcast? We post new episodes every second Tuesday at theaterfolk.com and on our Facebook page and Twitter. You can find us on youtube.com/theaterfolk, and you can find us on the Stitcher app. You can also subscribe to TFP on iTunes. All you gotta do is search for the word, what is it? Theater Folk. And that's where we're going to end. Take care, my friends. Take care.